It's bumping the $2 million mark.
Most of the complaints, because again, you've got four individuals full-time. These are professionals that are involved in commercial appraisal.
Right.
Appraising businesses. Nine that are trained as residential appraisers.
Right.
Where do you get most of the complaints? And how many complaints percentage-wise do we get? Because you've got, how many parcels of property are there in Shawnee County?
75,000.
75,000. On an annual basis, Mark Hickson, how many complaints come in? But gee, you've got my appraisal way too high. I don't imagine many people are coming in and saying, hey, can you up mine a little? That doesn't happen, I'm sure. But
you want to bet? It's gotten, that number, we haven't got a way to track it, but we may, just for curiosity's sake. But my staff, my residential staff, not the commercial staff, but they've noticed a sharp increase in the number of people appealing their values, wanting them increased over the last couple of years. And
why? What would?
Well,
for resale of the property, would that?
Yes.
Would that be it? Basically,
it's. I think it has to do with our website. We get over a million hits a year on that website. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that there are a lot of people who put a lot of confidence in our values being close to market value. And I think what typically happens is if somebody is considering selling their property, there may be things about the property that we don't know about. For instance, the biggest thing that catches us by surprise when a property sells for quite a bit more than we have it appraised for is the first thing we look for is a finished basement. If our records say that the basement is unfinished, probably when that property sold, it had a finished basement.
Okay, yeah.
And so that might be something we didn't know about. And so a lot of times people want to make sure that the county's appraised value can't be used against them by a potential buyer as being artificially, you know, or being low, and therefore you're asking way too much for your property. I think that's one thing. I don't know exactly what motivates people to want to have their values increased. There probably are people who just say, hey, look, I'm not paying my fair share of taxes, and I want to make sure that I am.
I would think that would be minuscule, but again, you actually have people that call and say up it. And again, I can understand, I guess, if you're looking a year down the road, selling your property, you know, what you've got down as appraised value, as you say, it's a credible figure. It does come into play. So then I can see, you know, individuals wanting to get that up. That makes some sense.
Well, and because of the fact that we haven't, for 2009 and 2010, appraised values across the board have more or less stayed the same. If you look at your 2010 value and compare it with your 09, it's probably the same value. And one of the reasons we know in hindsight that, which is always perfect, that those values are accurate is that we look at what properties have sold for in 2009 and what our appraised values were on those properties that did sell. And overall, our appraised values are at 99.46% of market value. And that's all up and down the price spectrum. You know, some places we're at 100%, like the stuff between $300,000 and $400,000. Some stuff we're at 98%, which is like the $100,000 to $120,000 price range. But for the most part, those are values, again, those are 2010 values, but they're the same values as 2008 and 2009. So in a lot of cases, people have, you know, they want to sell their house. Mm-hmm. And they want to see some appreciation on their investment. And they believe that perhaps if the county's value were a little higher, that could help them. And just like if anybody else comes to us and tells us they want us to increase or decrease the value, we don't just automatically do that. There has to be some justification for it. So if they tell us, well, you know what, I got a finished basement, I want to come clean with you, or I remodeled, or I did this, or I did that, and there was some deferred maintenance, I fixed it, and I just want you to know. If we can justify the fact that the market value, what's fair and equitable for that property, should go up or down, then we do that. It all pays the same. It doesn't make any difference to us.
Mark, now, getting back to the number of complaints roughly out of 75,000 parcels, you actually physically appraise, what, 25%?
We do every property every year. We physically... Yeah, we're required by law to update the values every year to market value. Mm-hmm. Now, we have to physically inspect every property every 6 years.
It's every 6 years. Okay, I was thinking every four.
So we do 17% a year.
Okay. So how many complaints do you get a year, roughly?
We had...
When I say complaints, somebody that's saying, hey, you got it too high, you got it too low, I want to go through the appeal process.
It's about 900 now.
That's down.
I haven't done any kind of study on this. I think there is probably a predictable correlation between the number of appeals you have and the magnitude of the increase in values. It's a nonlinear. I know that if we increase values 5%, we'll have probably in the neighborhood of about 1,500 appeals, 1,300 to 1,500 appeals. If we increase values 25%, we will probably have appeals in the neighborhood of, 15-20% of the county, which would be somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 10,000 appeals a year. Because we did that in 1997, values, as it turns out, again, when we looked back a year later, our values were correct, but they hadn't been updated for 4 years. And when I came here in 93, that was one of the charges I was given, is to fix this. We're out of compliance with the state. The state's threatening to take over the county appraiser's office. And so we did fix it, but we had to update values for 4 years, not just 1 year. And they went up about 25%. So we had a huge influx of appeals. It doesn't make any difference. One of the theories was the reason that the county was experiencing so many appeals and so much turmoil was because the values on the properties were not correct. They weren't fair and equitable. Well, that isn't what generates appeals. They can be fair and equitable. It's the amount of increase from 1 year to the next that generates appeals. And the reason is because, I think the main reason is because people associate their taxes with the amount of increase in their value. They've been trained to think that because of the fact that, well, what do you hear about whenever it's budget time? What's the city? What's the county? What's the school? They're going to not increase the mill levy. Nobody ever talks about what the budget's going to do. You know, and taxes are dependent on how much money your government is going to spend. They're not dependent upon the value of your property. If the government says we're not going to spend any money and the county appraiser triples the value of your house, your taxes are zero. It doesn't make any difference. And so, and if the budget does not change, but the value of your house goes up 200%, your taxes don't change because the mill levy goes down by 200%. So your taxes stay the same. So taxes drive taxes. I mean, that sounds too ridiculous to say, but appraised values don't drive taxes. It's spending and it's taxes that drive taxes.
Mark Hickson's my guest. Let's go to the emails. And we got one from Willis. Good morning, Willis. And Willis lost us for a minute, but apparently everything is back up and running. I don't know what happened because Willis is the only one that emailed us on that. But we have a couple of questions. And this one's from Frank Williams. Do you know Frank?
Let me read
the email and we'll get to this one. It says, this is to confirm the above, but I had a question for Mark and your guest. Okay, here we go. Supposedly, the state law requires two lists to be filed in the Shawnee County's Office of Clerk, one for taxable and one for where the property has not been established as having income. As you may or may not know, I have addressed this issue both in the case to the State Director of Property Tax and to the Office of Tax Appeals, and then to the appeal process of the local district court and paid the fee. My question is whether Mark Hickson has been complying with the facts and the law as it would apply to the above.
Yeah, I don't even know what that's about.
Okay.
Can you explain that to me? I'm sorry to it just...
Okay, Frank, email us back and with another...
maybe he's got
reworded. Okay, and let's come up with something else that maybe Mark can get an answer for.
Yeah, I don't...
Okay. Very good. Let's go to Myron. And Myron says, as a lifetime member of the cemetery, he's talking about Westlawn, could you ask your guest this question? Will the county bury me for free? Let's get into this Westlawn Cemetery, because a lot of our listeners probably aren't aware that we're talking about a cemetery off of I-70 and Auburn, I believe. That's
yes.
The one, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That the county had to take over because basically it was mismanaged. And a lot of people, I guess, had paid for burial plots, and now the money's gone.
Right.
The previous owners are gone, and now the county's kind of holding the bag, so to speak.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, I probably shouldn't open up that can of worms, because I really don't know what I'm talking about there. I don't know anything about... I was trying to be, comical in that, and as far as where the
but
county
the owners, I believe, that had these pre-burial plots, they lost, what, 90%? Something like that?
It was tragic.
John Lysinger, I know, was in charge of protecting as best he could, you know, the people that bought these burial
right.
plots out there. But I think they lost 90 cents on the dollar. Does that sound right?
It sounds, that's about what I only know what I read in the paper.
Yeah, I need to get, we'll get Commissioner Buehler or Commissioner Inslee on the show to talk about that, because it's been a while since it's been in the news.
Yeah.
So we'll do that.
And Sean may know more about that, too.
Hey, we need, let's take one more email question. And, okay, this is from Terrence, and it says, Jim, I also lost you for several minutes, so apparently Willis wasn't the only one. But we're back on now, I guess. I have no idea what happened. Huh. Okay, appreciate the email, Terrence, and we need to take a break. Mark Hickson's my guest, Shawnee County Appraiser. Before we take a break, my good friend, Madan Ratan, the previous owner of the Coffee Break Cafe out on Northwest Highway 24, now has opened up a cute little strip mall. In fact, we went out to a pre-opening of Dickie's Barbecue Tuesday. And Dickie's Barbecue is part of this little strip mall located on the southeast corner of Rochester and Northwest Highway 24. If you remember the Coffee Break Cafe, that's where it's all located. In fact, this is the grounds that the original Holiday Inn in Topeka sat on. Well, Madan Ratan just opened up a Holiday Inn Express on the same grounds, and it opened last Saturday. Where I'm going with all of this, the strip mall needs a name. And if you have a suggestion, you can send it to Madan Ratan or drop by the Holiday Inn Express with your suggestions, and the winner is going to get dinner at Dickie's Barbecue, night's lodging at the Holiday Inn Express, breakfast the following morning, the whole nine yards. For the person that comes up with the best name for the strip mall in front of the Holiday Inn Express. Okay, Brickhouse Antiques. Yes, indeed, folks. If you haven't been by Brickhouse Antiques recently, you need to do so. Rooms and rooms and rooms of antiques and collectibles conveniently located right off of I-470 on Burlingame Road, 37th and Burlingame. And, folks, their inventory is constantly changing, constantly rotating. So if there's something you're looking for in particular, and if you don't want to make the trip to 37th and Burlingame, give the owners, Lisa Cusick, Coralie Evans, a call. Let them know what it is you're looking for. And they'll try to find it. They might have it. If not, they'll move heaven and earth to find it. Their phone number, 266-6000. They're open 7 days a week at Brickhouse Antiques. Stay tuned. More to come. I'll be back with my guest, Mark Hickson, in just a moment. I'm Jim Cates.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They're not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They're interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Freudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Frost line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Jeremiah Bullfrogs. Again, a longtime sponsor of the Jim Cates Show, my home away from home. And, yep, I'll probably be in and out of there over the weekend. Folks, 29th and Wanamaker, that's the location. Great, great food if you like hot, spicy chili, if you like buffalo wings. Doesn't get any better than what you can get at Jeremiah Bullfrogs. Hot, spicy, you betcha. Delicious. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's a televised sporting event, you can sure catch it at Jeremiah Bullfrogs, whether it's a traditional nationwide sporting event or whether it's more of a regional game. If it's a regional game, if it's on TV somewhere, Jeremiah Bullfrogs can probably pull that game in on satellite. And all you have to do is go in and ask. I know there's quite a following for Chicago's arena football team because of Troy Villadue, former Silver Lake resident, that's now the defensive coordinator. And I know there's a fan base that watches Chicago's arena football at Jeremiah Bullfrogs. So, folks, again, if it's a televised sporting event, check it out with the waitresses at Jeremiah Bullfrogs 29th and Wanamaker. Mark Hickson's my guest, Shawnee County appraiser, regular guest. Mark's been on the show, I don't know, half a dozen times over the past few years.
At least.
Regular guest. Jim.Cates at CJOnline.com if you've got a question or a comment. And let's go to our emails. It says, Jim, please ask your guest how property values, and this is from Dwight Calhoun, one of our leading insurance agents in Topeka. And it says, Jim, please ask your guest how property values can be the same as 2008 when the market collapsed. Realtors have told me that the Topeka market fell 10% also, and as far as I know, hasn't fully recovered yet. So how can our property values not go down also? Thanks for asking. Dwight.
popular myth. We had this year, we expected to have quite a few fewer appeals because of that phenomenon I told you about where you don't increase values, you don't get very many appeals.
Yeah.
We had about 800 appeals last year, and we had about 900 this year. And the big wild card this year wasn't, you know, that the market has gone down, the market has collapsed, and yada, yada. It was the FEMA maps. A lot of people are assuming that they've lost value because of going into the floodplain. Or proposed.
In fact, I've had Dwight on the show as a guest talking about flood insurance. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dwight would be very familiar with that.
Yeah. Probably more familiar with insurance than market values of homes because according to what, and, you know, we just deal with buyers and sellers in the marketplace and what's happening. And again, I mean, what makes you think that the market has collapsed? And when I say the market, I mean the real estate market in Shawnee County. I don't mean the market in general, throwing into the mix maybe the National Association of Realtors survey that includes 20 metropolitan markets. The closest four to us are Chicago, Dallas, Denver, and Minneapolis. What do those markets have anything to do with Shawnee County at all? I have no idea. But if you look at the real estate market, residential real estate market, I guess we're talking about here, in Shawnee County, then our appraised values, again, for all of the year 2009, were running right at 99.46% of market value. Now, what else would you use to compare appraised values with market value if not sales? So we compare appraised values with sales, and where anybody is coming up with this 10% reduction or collapse in the market is beyond me because it's just not out there. Now, if you look at a single property or if you take cherry pick, you know, 10 properties or something like that, perhaps you could make the data say that. But if you look at all of the sales, 1,326 sales is what I'm looking at here. And, you know, you just don't see it. I also have looked at the ratios.
The 10% figure, Mark Hickson, would that be sales are down by 10%? Would that be where the figure could be coming
maybe,
from, possibly?
Yeah, maybe the volume, because
volume is down. Yeah.
The volume for 2009 was down from 2008. The volume for 2010, we just got the statistics from the Topeka Area Association of Realtors. It's up about 19%. So from the same period last year up through April or May, we're looking at an increase in the number of sales, the volume of sales, mm-hmm. of about a little over 19%. So maybe not that may be just a misunderstanding of what is meant by 10%.
Connie Goodnow with Topeka Association of Realtors on the show, or Brad Bassett. I think Brad's now the chairperson, I think, this year. Shanine Wills was last year.
Connie keeps all those stats.
Yeah.
She's got so many statistics.
Connie would be a good one. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Jim, Cates at cgonline.com if you've got a question or a comment. Something we were talking about off-air, kind of a fun question. The most expensive residential home in Shawnee County. Wittig home.
Yeah, I didn't bring that list, but yes, someone asked me to run that, and it was Wittig's house this year again.
Yeah, $2 million. Appraised at $2,053,700. Wow. Okay.
That's a lot of money.
Yes, it is. The taxes, roughly, on a $2 million home would be what?
Oh, they would probably be somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.5% of that. So what would that be?
30
grand?
30 grand.
Yeah.
In taxes.
Right.
Incredible. Let's go to the phones real quick. Good morning.
Hello, Jim. Dwight Calhoun.
Hello, Dwight. How are you, my friend?
I guess I need to go a little more in-depth into my question here.
Oh, okay.
Well, I had been told by realtors that the market was up. let me rephrase that. The sales was up because the market had actually fallen in home prices by 10%. So that was my question. If that's true, then how could the property values go up? Now, am I understanding what you're saying, that when you're comparing the sales to your numbers, that's not true?
No, it's not true.
Okay. So you would disagree with the realtors that say that?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, here's what I would say is, if that has happened, if that is happening in the marketplace, it just happened, like in the last 30 days. That's a huge drop in 30 days. That's the kind of drop you see over a year or so.
Well, no, actually, I'm going back to, and probably, no, this information that I'm basing this on is basically probably middle of 09 on through, after, you know, after what happened in October of 08 and then, you know, March of 09 as things fell, the real estate market fell. I talked to some realtors that we deal with here in town, and that's what they said, that the real estate values had went down about 10%, but because of that, actually, in Shawnee County, the sales had actually went up. It helped stimulate sales.
Well, I don't know what they're comparing that 10% drop to, because what I use as a unit of comparison is our appraised values. Possibly what they're talking about is a different number. Maybe they're talking about a potential value that the property might have had the market not tipped over and flattened out, because we were running at about a 5 to 10% appreciation rate on an annual basis. And so if you look at that as an opportunity cost, you know, where in a normal market, you would have seen a 10% appreciation over a certain period of time in this property, and now you're not, then you could say, in effect, you've lost 10% of the value.
But I guess the key point of this is you're saying, just to clarify, that if we looked at your appraisals and you looked at the actual sales of the ones that sold, you were right, what, 99% of the time? Is that what you said?
Yes. Okay. Well, in a way. Let me just make sure that I'm clear in what I'm saying is here. The median, when you look at all of the houses that sell, what we do is we run a ratio of the appraised value to the sale price on every single one of them.
Okay.
Now, not all of those will be at 99%. Some of those will be at 110. Some of them will be at 90. And, you know, all over the board. But the median ratio is 98.46. That means that when you array those ratios from the highest to the lowest ratio, 1,326 of them, and you pick the one in the middle, the ratio there is, what did I say, 99.46. And so what you have to do then is you have to say, okay, well, you've got outliers. You're just looking at the middle. So how far did you deviate from that median ratio? How uniform are your values? That's more important than anything else. I mean, we could be at 100% market value. We could be at 200% market value. What property owners and taxpayers really, really care more about than anything else is, how fair is that? What's my neighbor's appraised value? And so we look at the level of uniformity, and we determine that by running a coefficient of dispersion between all of these various ratios. And the lower that number is, the higher the level of uniformity you have. Well, our COD for 2009 was 6.02.
COD.
Coefficient of dispersion. What that is it's a measure of the average absolute deviation from your median. So in other words, you have a deviation on the high side and you have some on the low side. So you want to have the average absolute, regardless of whether it's high or low. The law says we can have a COD of 20 or less. Industry standards say that it has to be less than 15 or less. Ours is 6.02.
Okay. Let me ask one more question. Of the home sales in, well, I don't know, if we want to go a year, a month, whatever, what's the percentage of home sales are you checking out compared to your appraisals? You check 100%, 10%?
Yes, we do all of them. The state does a sample. The state does a ratio study on every county. They only use a sample of about 400 sales that they pick at random, but I look at them all.
Okay.
Roy, right, thanks for the call, my friend.
Thank you.
You enjoy the weekend.
Yep, you too, Jim.
Right, Cal. Okay, emails, jim.cates@cjonline.com. Just got an email from Dwayne Rain, one of our Texas listeners, former Topekan, and he said, we were off the air for a short period of time back when Willis emailed us, and Terrence said the same thing, but we're back in good shape now. But Dwayne said, Dickey's Barbecue is a very good restaurant. There are a number of them down here in Texas, Plano and the Frisco area, and I have been to a number of them, and they are very good. It's a good place to take your family for a meal. In fact, Dickey's is a chain, I believe, out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And that's the restaurant, again, that's going into Madan Raton's new shopping area in North Topeka. And it's owned by Dave Wyrick, the guy that owns Quiznos.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Same guy. In fact, Quiznos is also in that same shopping area.
You're making me hungry for barbecue. And I had barbecue last night.
But I love barbecue.
I do, too.
Well, Dickey's was good. We thoroughly enjoyed it. I've been a huge Arthur Bryant's fan. If I'm in Kansas City, I'm going to go to Arthur Bryant's.
Yeah.
Now, you're from Fort Scott. I'm
yes.
Sure, right? So you've been into the Kansas City area for barbecue.
Yes.
Yeah.
Arthur Bryant's.
Yeah,
you know what? The last few times I've been there, I've been to Jack Stack downtown, and
not familiar with it.
Oh, it's Fiorella Jack's. They have they're more famous for their steaks. Martin City, I think, is where they started.
Okay.
Out south of Kansas City, and now they've got a couple other places in town.
I have been there. That's been 20 years ago.
Yeah,
25 years ago in Martin City. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And but I love that Kansas City barbecue, but I like Texas barbecue, which I guess Dickey's is. I've heard it's really good. A little more spicy.
Uh-huh.
And Famous Dave's, Grover's, Boss Hogs. I don't know how you know. We ought to stay on Dickey's, I know.
Now, there are some good ones.
Barbecue is just one of my weaknesses. I guess maybe the worst barbecue I ever had was great.
John Arnold just walked in. He's going to be joining us at 9 along with Earl Glenn talking about the top stories of the week. Let's come back to the top appraised homes. There's a home that has just been built at 53rd and Indian Hills Road. Are you familiar with it?
No.
Northwest corner.
The
thing looks like it's a Ramada Inn or something. Huge.
Yes.
It would absolutely make the Wittig home look like Section 8 housing. And this is a... This is a huge home.
I haven't been up close to it. I've seen pictures on our, we have pictures of it on our database. But
have you got an up-to-date appraisal for that house?
No.
We've always given, the Wittigs credit for having the most expensive home in Shawnee County, and that's appraised at $2 million.
Right. Well, this may go over that. I don't know. The thing is, when you look at homes like that, you know, there's a lot more money goes into them than $2 million.
Yeah. There,
and you take that property, that Wittig house, or some of these real high-end homes, you take them out of this market, of course, they're going to bring a lot more closer, or maybe exceed the cost to replace them in another market. But here in Topeka, you hear about getting overbuilt for the neighborhood. Well, sometimes people don't build those houses because they ever intend to turn around and sell them and, make a little profit on their investment. They have a different motivation for needing to have that kind of, quality of construction and material and workmanship that goes into it.
Yeah. Well, the Wittig house, I think, is always going to have a high resale value potential because of its previous owner.
Right.
The home of a former vice president or a presidential candidate being the Landon home.
Uh-huh.
That home's always going to be worth $2 million plus to somebody.
Right.
Yeah. If a realtor got the listing for that, it would be snapped up and a New York second probably for $2 million. I don't know how bad the Whittings have screwed up the original home, whether there's really much left of the original Landon Mansion, but still, just because of its historical significance. But this home at 53rd Indian Hills Road, folks, if you haven't taken a drive by this place, you need to. I know traffic has really picked up. I keep saying Indian Hills Road. It's 53rd and Urish. 53rd and Urish.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
I keep saying Indian Hills. That's where we have the clothing-free locale. Lake Eden. That's our naturist camp.
Is that still doing that? Is it still going strong? I'll be darned.
You know, we've had the owner of
I haven't been out there. I guess maybe you have. But.
Well, I've driven by the place quite a few times because we used to, back when I was on 1440 radio, get a lot of complaints from the neighbors about Lake Eden. And, folks, Lake Eden, Eden is nude spelled backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nudist colony. And we've had the owner of Lake Eden on the show on several occasions. My complaint continues to be with our county commission on this Lake Eden situation. I don't care what consenting adults do. You know, they could be in a hot tub with a goat out there for all I care. It makes no difference to me. Except Lake Eden lets children come out to play.
Yeah.
At a nudist camp.
Right.
Now, if you've got, you know, children by their very nature, as adults are, we're somewhat inquisitive people. Now, you've got this 12-year-old little girl, 12-year-old boy, whatever the case may be. And mom and dad says, okay, pack it up. We're on our way to Lake Eden for the weekend. That child has absolutely no say in whether he or she at 12 years old is going to go out with primarily adults to a nudist colony.
Yeah.
You know, why our county commission, at the very least, hasn't done something to say, yeah, you want to go out there and do whatever you want to do as long as it's adult, consenting adults. Have a good time. Keep kids away from the place. Why the county commission has never addressed that issue, and I've talked to two of our three county commissioners about it, and I think our third one probably listens to the show upon occasion. I don't understand why we still allow kids, which has nothing whatsoever to do with your job as Shawnee County appraiser. How many homes do we have? Earl Glenn just walked in from affluent Johnson County. And God knows how many homes there are in Johnson County that are over $1 million in value. Earl might have a home that's in excess of $1 million. I don't know. But how many homes do we have in Shawnee County that would now officially go over the $1 million mark that are on?
We don't have that many. I don't know exactly, but I think when I run that top 10 list every year, there are, before you get to number 10, you're out of the $1 million range.
Wow. Now, how would I run that? Let's go to your site.
You can't run it off my site.
I can't do it.
No.
Okay.
There is a reporting or a query option that you have to subscribe to.
Okay.
But I'm not a subscriber, so I can't get you on there.
Okay. Could you run that list?
Yes.
Or an email? I mean, it's public information, I guess.
It is.
So you could email that to me?
Yeah. Great. I do that every year.
Okay. For the fun of it, I'll get that information on the air. But you say there's less than 10 homes in Shawnee County that would appraise at $1 million or more.
I believe so, yes.
Well, John Arnold, I know your home just missed the mark.
Two scales of magnitude. Yeah.
How about Earl Glenn? Your home, would it make the list? No? No? Okay, we're 0 for 3. I've got the smallest house on the lake at Lake Sherwood, so I'm way off the mark.
Well, Lake Sherwood houses are all under evaluated.
Especially if they're on the lake.
That's all, right, exactly.
Let's all say goodbye to John.
Everybody knows that.
That's a pretty sweet setup out there, though. You're fortunate for astute investor.
Yeah, it's a great place. In fact,
it is.
We looked for 20 years to find a place that we could afford on the lake. And you know, if you're looking at living at Lake Sherwood, if you want on the water, you're buying the water. You're not buying a home. The home becomes secondary.
Right.
No, I mean, if you're looking for that perfect home. There's only 185 homes on the water out there to start with.
Right.
So we bought a fixer-upper, and I'm telling you, this place was a real fixer-upper. Smallest house on the lake.
Uh-huh.
And it had some foundation challenges, which it still does. And that's the only thing we could afford, frankly, 19 years ago when we bought. So, yeah, it is. It's great living.
Well,
just to wake up and the calming effect of looking out over water. You know, there's just a calming effect about that. Yeah.
And do all of them, I know they have some of them that are not on the water, have waterfront rights that can be purchased or that attached to. They're a right that you can sell or convey with the property.
Right.
Do all of them on the water have the lake rights?
Right.
Okay.
Folks, what we're talking about, most of you are familiar probably with Lake Sherwood, is a residential lake at the far southwest corner of Topeka. In fact, we're just right outside the city limits and want to remain that way.
Should be inside the city limits.
I thought we said you're right, John.
I don't know. I think let's go back to 1987 and just relive that again.
Oh, Lord.
Is that when it all happened? They had the court case or something? I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, in 1993, we relived it again. We formed a committee, and we were going to incorporate Lake Sherwood and become a city. And if we would have, back in 1993, you've got 675 incorporated communities in Kansas. We would have automatically been in the top 50 in terms of population.
Probably.
We would have had a population of 5,500 at the time, and now it would be 7,000, 8,000. So we would be a good-sized community. But your question about lake rights, and folks, Lake Sherwood, it's a private lake, and it's a lakefront development. It's a private lake. There's 185 homes on the lake, Mark Hickson, that all have lake rights, and you pay for these, you know, dues going into the Lake Association. And then there's 145 homes off the lake, what we call Class B members, that also have lake privileges, lake rights. And then we've got a marina, you know, for those homes to where people can, residents can dock their boats at the marina, and then they pay dues. And those memberships are transferable. You know,
right.
And you've got 2,000 homes in the Lake Sherwood community that, you know, are in a field of membership, so to speak, a geographical area that makes them eligible for lake membership, for one of those 145 off-lake memberships.
Mm-hmm.
So our guesstimate is, for those of us that have served on the board at Lake Sherwood, it adds probably $10,000 to the value of your home if you live off the lake and have a lake membership.
Right. Yeah. That's the kind of rule of thumb that keeps going around is 10 grand. That hasn't changed much over the years.
Yeah, and again, the demand, still a strong demand, you know, for the Class B members, because, again, then you've got water rights and, you know, clubhouse rights and tennis and beach and rights and all of that. So, yeah, it's worth 10 grand.
Mostly. Does the lake provide the drinking water for everybody that's out there, Jim?
No. The city of Sherwood, of course, you being the COO, former COO of this community,
You
know the answer of this, that you are gigging the Lake Sherwood residents for a 40% premium on our drinking water.
What would the cost be if they had to erect their own water plant?
Well, we had our own and gave it to the city of Topeka as far as the sewage plant, water treatment plant, the whole nine yards down.
Oh, sewage too, huh? City provides sewage and water.
No, we built it and gave it to the city of Topeka. God knows why we did that, but we did.
Because the cost of keeping up with the regulations is way more than you want to spend.
Well, we are getting gigged 40% premiums. We pay our water rate of 40% higher than you do in the city, folks, and we are out of time.
Yeah, that's so convenient.
Well, Jim, you probably don't know this, but my first job out of college was as a real estate appraiser.
Yeah?
In Los Angeles. Yeah, for an insurance company. Insurance company appraising is far easier than tax appraising.
Open up your Marshall and Swift. And
you got it. I think it was Dodge book, actually.
Oh, yeah.
But you only had to worry about replacement costs. But one of the things that happened during that, Jim, that you'd be interested in, is that I met Shelley Berman. I did his house, which was kind of fun, up in the hills someplace in L.A. I was all over there, L.A. County. And you reminded me of that because of Mark, but also because you mentioned getting into a hot tub with a goat. And Shelley Berman had a quote some years ago when Erskine Caldwell wrote Tobacco Road. He said, "I don't know why that guy bothers to sit down and write. If I thought like that, I'd just sit around and think." And I think you're in the same category, getting in this hot tub with a goat.
Yeah. On that note, we are going to take a break. Mark Hickson, good to see you, my friend.
Good seeing you, too.
Always fun to have you on. We'll look forward to that list. We'll have some fun with that on the air.
Okay.
Okay. Coming up, John Arnold again. Yes, yes, yes. Earl Glenn as well. Hey, good news, folks. Sharon Angle, a guest on the show a couple of months ago, I had Sharon on the show because she's been a friend and to give her a little publicity on her senatorial run in the state of Nevada. She's a candidate for the United States Senate. This was a five-way primary and still is. But when I had Sharon Angle on the show, Sharon was a distant third. But I thought I'd give her a little publicity on the air and maybe raise a few bucks for her. Well, I doubt if it has anything to do with this show, but Sharon Angle now is virtually in a neck-and-neck race, has moved ahead of Danny Tarkanian, and is in a neck-and-neck race with Sue Loudon for the Republican nomination to go up against Terry Reid. I think possibly more than this show, it might have been the fact that the Tea Party Express in Nevada has endorsed Sharon Angle. She clearly is the conservative out of the three running. Danny Tarkanian professes to be a conservative. He's the celebrity. Sue Loudon owns a casino or two. But Sharon Angle is the true conservative in this race. It could be another Rand Paul type of run, folks. Keep your eye on this one. If you want any information on Sharon Angle, if you want to make a small contribution, Lord knows she can use it. She's going up against the establishment in Nevada, but she now is in a statistical dead heat with the leader, Sue Loudon, and she has really moved up because, again, she had a 5% polling when she was on the show 90 days ago, and now she's up to 29%, Sue Loudon 30. Tarkanian's fallen off the table. He's down to around 20 or so. It's now a two-way race. The conservatives, we've got a shot, folks. Okay, stay tuned. I'm Jim Cates.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Freudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Foss line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, I just discovered I didn't have the mute button off. Okay. We are now on. We're going to start this all over. Good morning.
Hello, Jim Gates.
Yes.
That is Terrence.
I just discovered our mistake, Terrence. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, you just came on.
Thank you for calling.
We were having a private conversation here, Jim.
Well, we're going to start this conversation all over again.
Well, that was the best part of the show we've ever done.
Yeah, we can't do that again.
Highlight material, huh?
Highlight material, yes. At 8 o'clock, I have no idea why we were off the air for 4 or 5 minutes.
Well, did we lose all of Mark Hickson?
No.
No.
He was off for maybe 3 or 4 minutes.
Oh, okay.
But when we came back on, there's one more button that should have been pushed.
I hate it when that happens.
Let's start all over. Earl Glenn.
You got two buttons you got to push.
I was 1 for 2. What we were talking about off the air, folks, we'll repeat this conversation on air. Sam Brownback is going to officially file for office at 11 o'clock Tuesday morning in Topeka. And, of course, that's when he will officially be announcing who his running mate is, because the running mate obviously is going to have to officially file for office at the same time. 2-day tour where Senator Brownback is going to be touring the state of Kansas, 8 stops over a 2-day period. As an officially filed candidate, him and his running mate are going to be on this tour for 2 days. But the first announcement's not going to be made in Topeka at 11 o'clock. That's going to be 9 o'clock in Overland Park. The conventional wisdom is, if the first announcement is being made in Overland Park at 9, the running mate obviously is within walking distance of the official announcement in Overland Park. It's not going to be a legislator or anyone out of Wichita, Emporia, speculation there, by the way, as well, and Topeka. It certainly appears that the running mate's coming out of Overland Park. Now, let's go back to this conversation, Earl Glenn. We'll start with you. You say Peggy Dunn, a name that was, it's been bandied about in the press, the Capital Journal as well. Mayor of Leawood is not.
The Lawrence Journal World late yesterday reported that she said she wasn't the person.
She's out. Okay.
But there's speculation, several other people. Nick Jordan's probably the next highest profile one, but there's other names that are out there too. Carl Gerlach, the mayor of Overland Park, there's been some speculation he might be in. There's some speculation that it could be like even State Senator Karen Brownlee, somebody like that, but who knows.
Well, you mentioned, Earl, that Gerlach was a former K-State basketball player and now is the mayor of Overland Park. That might have some appeal. You know, one of the things we talked about earlier was that I said that the candidate that Sam picks has to be no taller than him.
That's a problem.
And no prettier. And I don't know how pretty Gerlach is.
Guys don't rate guys. I can't do that.
That's right, yeah. And
are you rating Sam Brownback as pretty? Is that where you're going with this, John?
No, it's a self judgment kind of a thing. Uh-huh. You know, the governor doesn't want a lieutenant governor who's prettier than he is, unless she's a woman. And then that's okay.
Pull your mic in.
Then that's okay.
Okay.
And so I thought when I heard that Peggy Dunn was possible, I thought she'd be a good candidate, good running mate for Sam. I've met her, and she's a very, very nice lady. Has been mayor quite a while, 8 years maybe or so, something
at least.
That. Yeah. And pretty well connected with the Dunn construction.
The Dunn family, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know Gerlach at all, but...
Well, Peggy Dunn of Dunn Construction?
Daughter-in-law of the dad. I mean, her husband is involved, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And, of course, Gerlach has some appeal to western Kansas. The K-State holds sway in western Kansas. I think there's a lot of that. But the fact that he's Overland Park helps with Johnson County and the eastern part also. So, but I just think the height thing would be a bit of a problem for him.
I guess that's true that they normally.
Well, it's kind of like you want to get to know.
You hold hands and you hold up in the air, and Sam's off the ground.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not a good look.
Well, Peggy Dunn probably could buy Johnson County, couldn't she? If her father-in-law is J.E. Dunn, J.F. Dunn, whoever.
She lives in Leawood. People in Leawood are typically not hurting very badly. So.
One of those homes we were talking about during the 8 o'clock hour that would definitely appraise for more than $1 million in all.
There are several there, I'm sure.
But, you know, gender balance, I don't know that it's that important in Kansas because, you know, we have led the pack in the state when we had Jan Myers, congresswoman out of the Johnson County area, one of the few early women serving in Congress, Nancy Kassebaum, three-term United States Senator. Joan Finney.
Sure.
You know, we broke ground there as well, as far as electing a woman governor back in 92, Joan Finney, and then, of course, we followed it up with Governor Sevillius. So I don't think, you know, by balancing the ticket in terms of gender, it means much in Kansas anymore. I think we're beyond that. But having said that, early on, the conventional wisdom was that possibly Susan Weigel again, Senator Weigel,
from Wichita,
she's been a running mate before, sharp, attractive, focused as a conservative, the whole nine yards, would have been great. Peggy Mast, legislator out of
Emporia,
Lyon County area, again, for the same reasons that Weigel would have been good, Peggy Mast would have been good. And then Peggy Dunn, of course, in Johnson County, but it appears we're going to go back to a traditional male. I'm in agreement with you. I think it's going to be Dick Jordan.
That's where the smart
money is. He jumped out of this congressional race. Now, why did Dick Jordan jump out of this congressional race? Kind of unexpectedly, and you haven't heard much of it.
Well, there was speculation on a blog as far back as December that that was going to happen, so who knows?
Okay, I missed that.
Yeah.
Jordan has
before
been,
Kansas Day, anyway.
Is this Kansas Connections blog, you mean?
No. That was Kansas Progress, I believe, that speculated on that.
Jordan's been pretty active in economic development also when he was in the legislature and espousing different kinds of programs and things, and was very active in trying to evaluate the effectiveness of many of the state agencies in economic development.
Well, I think he still has some involvement with the Kansas Bioscience Authority, if I'm
and
not mistaken.
And that, too. So, you know, he has some strength in what are the key issues of today in terms of job creation, economic development, health, economic health of the state.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. I don't know him as a campaigner. I have no idea.
Do you know him personally?
I've met him, but I don't know him personally. Yeah.
I've met him several times, yeah.
Your impression. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rank him as a candidate?
Would you rate him He hasn't had, I mean, he obviously ran for Congress, and he had a tough race there, but I can't really rate his Senate races that he had, how hard they were, because he's in Shawnee, it's kind of a fairly conservative area. He would have had a relatively easy time getting elected there compared to other races.
Yeah.
So I really don't know how to rate his campaign skills.
Okay. I've had him on the show. I've met Nick Jordan to say that I know him well. I don't. I've met him on several occasions. My impression is to meet him is to be favorably impressed by him one-on-one.
He's very personable.
Very likable, personable, charming individual. As a talk show guest, he needs to sniff it up a bit because he has a tendency to get into this campaign mode, which so many people that come on the show, candidates, they're in that campaign mode rather than having a conversation.
Kind of talking points after they get in there.
Yeah, you get into the talking points and you really aren't carrying on a conversation. You can say, good morning, how are you? Well, I'm against this and I'm for that. You know, getting into those 14 bullet points you want to make sure that you touch on in your 15 minutes on a talk show. But
so he's getting a phone call now to brush up on this, then, Jim?
He needs one. But again, you know, he's not stupid by any stretch of the imagination. And again, meets people, I think, very, very well one-on-one.
Well,
his voting record, by the way, when he was in the state Senate, his lifetime voting record on tax and spend issues, now this deals with the fiscal issues only, folks, was a 65% lifetime rating. The traditional conservatives in the state Senate, their lifetime rating is going to be in that 75 percentile or higher.
A bit low.
Yeah, it's a bit low, but it's not bad.
Who's rating this, Jim?
Now, this was the Kansas Taxpayers Network. Now
okay.
It's Americans for Prosperity has
taken
that over.
All right. Okay, good.
And
that's
this
good
truly
know.
Is a group that's, you know, it's tax and spend, tax and spend.
Well,
tax
Carl
and
Peter
spend.
John was the one that was behind that.
Yes, and Carl did a great job because he focused on, you know, just the spending issues. That was his primary focus. That was his only focus. So at any rate, Jordan's record certainly better than our Senate leadership. Republican Senate leadership, but not quite up there, you know, with the
problem with tax and spend evaluations, to me, Jim, is that $1 of spending, they're not equal. $1 of spending for legislative salaries or perks is not the same as $1 of spending for social services for the elderly, or $1 of spending for Medicaid, or $1 of spending for public safety. And, you know, these tax and spend guys rate these things equal, And I just don't think that's a fair way to do it.
Well, they have weightings, and I guess what you'd have to just take their data and perhaps put your own weightings on them, and then you could come up with your own ranking.
Right. Perhaps they did that, that'd be fine, but you know, it's not transparent in those kinds of things how they're weighting it all.
Well, you got to read deep into the methodology and exactly how it works.
Well, you know, and again, it was funny, Baloney. We've talked about this before on the show. Some of our legislators that were giving up their pay.
Yes.
Turning back their pay, you know, in the veto session. It's a phony baloney issue.
Yeah.
And with all due respect, several legislators, a couple of which from Shawnee County, said, nah, you know, I've made enough money this year, I don't need any more. If you take a look at what their spouses do for a living, if you take a look at their own personal wealth, bad deal. And it's one of the very, very, very few times I've disagreed with the editorial written in this paper, saying hurrah for all of these legislators saying that they were going to turn back their pay. Very unfair and bad for the system, because I think what we ended up doing, now you've got a lot of legislators that aren't necessarily up here for the money, but they can't afford to sit up here and pay expenses on a veto session, money coming out of their pocket. So now you've got several legislators, they can't afford to be here. They got to go home. They're going to vote for anything just to get the hell out of town. And I think that possibly...
They have to.
Yes, out of economic necessity.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a phony baloney issue. Okay, John Arnold, let's get to your top story of the week, and then we're going to go to Earl Glenn.
Let me say one thing, though, about the lieutenant governor thing. The Lawrence Journal-World reported that Peggy Dunn said that she's not the person. Wouldn't be the first time that somebody who was a potential candidate said no, no, no until yes, yes, yes came about. And that's not necessarily dishonest. It's just that the candidate, the governor, has to be the one to make the announcement, not the lieutenant governor.
Well, the decision, maybe it hasn't been totally made. Who knows?
And it's exactly possible. Well, I hadn't been asked yesterday, and today I was, so I'm happy to be.
Yeah, the call could come late Sunday.
That's right. So, you know, we'll see. I guess Tuesday, you said, Jim.
Late Monday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Tuesday at 11 o'clock in Topeka. And again, folks, if you're listening in Johnson County, the official announcement's going to be at 9 o'clock in Johnson County. And Earl Glenn, that's going to be at the Metcalf Shopping Center, 126th and Metcalf.
That's like 95th and Metcalf.
I assume that's the Brownback headquarters, Johnson County headquarters.
That I, well, 125th would be closer to where the Johnson County Republican Party office is. So.
Okay. All right.
Well, now... is that Overland Park or is that Leawood?
They're both Overland Park. Overland Park's kind of long and skinny from
north
to south.
Okay.
So.
What it is, it's Shawnee Mission.
Yeah, it's Shawnee Mission, and you don't.
Okay.
I've never liked that because I went down to Shawnee Mission. I couldn't find Shawnee. Couldn't find Shawnee Mission on the map. I can find Shawnee on the map. You can find, and why we do that, I still don't understand.
I don't either, because folks, most of you listening, I'm sure, are aware of the fact, and you've heard Shawnee Mission, Kansas, all your life. There is no such thing as Shawnee Mission.
Which the name
Kansas.
Of a post office and the That's name it. Of the schools, but there's no city called Shawnee Mission.
Yeah, there's no
is
city.
Is that right?
No Shawnee
it's
Mission.
It's very confusing if you're trying to find it on the map.
Yeah.
Well, sure.
John Arnold, your top story of the week. Then we're going to go to Earl Glenn.
KU ticket scandal. Or you might make it generic. Now, KU has joined the ranks of K-State in terms of having an athletic department that's out of control. You know? However you want to take a look at it, but I think both are there, and I think the ticket thing is a big deal. I mean, when you have both above the fold in the Capital Journal for about the third day and an editorial on the subject, it's probably the big story for the week. Of course, you can't ignore the oil in the Gulf, but locally, the ticket scandal is the big deal.
Well, and I don't quite understand how auditors didn't catch that sooner, because the number of dollars involved, the number of tickets involved, it seems like that could have been picked up. So I guess maybe they'll have some new safeguards in place down the road.
I suspect that they weren't auditing those tickets in that way, and I think the criticism of Lou Perkins is justified in terms of errors of omission. Maybe he wasn't involved in it, so it's not an error of commission on his part, but certainly you're in charge. You ought to be doing that kind of audit yourself to make sure what's happening with all these tickets. What do we do with these when they're sold and, you know, we don't advance in the tournament or something? He ought to be asking those questions. Should have been.
Answer me. You know, KU, I think they hold the Division I record for consecutive sellouts in basketball.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. If not, they've got to be up
so
there amongst the top
four or five. Market for their tickets, yes.
Yeah.
All right. So we know every game's a sellout. 17,426 seats or whatever. Okay, you multiply that times the ticket price, the audit trail wouldn't be hard to follow. How in God's name could you misplace 2,000 tickets a game? Because if the average ticket price is $14 or $42, whatever
the number is,
you just take that times 17,426 or whatever the seating capacity is, then you know at the end of the night when you're counting up receipts, you should have X number of dollars on hand.
That's what I don't understand.
How could it? How could they have done this for so many years? I mean, that's basic auditing 101.
And there's
how
some,
could you screw it up?
There's some circulation. The postseason tickets and how those are accounted for, too, might even mean more money because those are kind of very wanted.
Yep. I mean, if I were AD, I think I'd have a spreadsheet telling me how much money I made game by game.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
Be tracking it very closely and saying, okay, we had 2,000 unpaid for seats last night. How come? Where'd they come from?
Yeah, how could you possibly have 2,000 unpaid seats?
Well,
in an arena that has sold out every game.
I've been there twice, and I had to buy them from scalpers on the sidewalk. So.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't understand the chancellor yesterday not just turning around and just slapping Perkins upside of the head. And
she looked like she wanted to. She honestly did. When he
he still there?
When he was sitting there saying, oh, you know, well, I didn't have anything to do with it, but it happened on my watch, so I'm responsible. Well, yeah,
he's responsible, but he's not taking the blame.
Good night. Good night, Lou. Say good night, Lou. You make twice as much as the chancellor, and you're not watching the P's and Q's of basics.
I'd have sent him back to Connecticut and a Connecticut second. He would have been gone.
But ultimately, it really affects the people that are paying to go to the games. I mean, it doesn't really affect the program. It doesn't really affect. I mean, it's a little bit of a blemish on their reputation. Perhaps.
The blemish Morningstar. Where's all of this headed? Anybody have any information on this Morningstar potential scandal that has been aired or written about already?
Yeah, it was written about by YahooSports.com or something a day before this report came out. That identified that Roger Morningstar was part of the group that was doing something along with the Pump Brothers, I believe their names, and a couple of other people were mentioned. But the report itself, the 29-page report that the law firm did, I don't know that it mentioned Roger Morningstar. I don't think it did.
I hope not. How could you do that to your son?
Well,
you know, the son, Brady, plays ball for Kansas University. Why would you put yourself in a position that this obviously is going to have a tremendous impact on Brady Morningstar, basketball player for KU? Is money that important? I hope this Morningstar is just a rumored situation and he's not involved in it. I do too,
because there was such.
I can understand greed, but you know, throwing your son under the bus, which basically, in essence, public relations-wise, that's exactly what's going to happen if Morningstar ends up being, you know, tied into all of this.
And there were such warm and fuzzy feelings about Sherron Collins talking about the close relationship that he had with the Morningstar family, how they took him in and were really good to him, and Brady is like a brother to him and all of that. You know, that's good stuff. And I hate to see their name besmirched if it's true. I hate to see that happen, because that's good stuff.
Earl Glenn, your top story of the week.
Well, I brought six, Jim, so we'll need an hour and a half. No.
Goodness, we're out of time.
But well, you know how I like epic stories, so I wanted to kind of highlight one thing that was published here a couple days ago from the Capital Journal called Reformer Deserves Praise Not Persecution, where Rick Anderson was kind of sticking up for Keen Umbear, the attorney that blew the whistle on the Topeka Correctional Facility, and I think that's all very good. And I guess this really hasn't played its way out to the Board of Disciplinary Administrator, but there's a curious thing in this article, though, that there's a whole paragraph about the complaint against Rucker, and everything in there was off the table at the end of the hearing. So it's not really clear why Rick Anderson might have included that in his almost a swipe against Rucker, because at the end of Rucker's hearing, there really was very, very little left on the table. There were some technicalities that are even kind of hard to understand. So It's just not clear why that's in this article.
Okay, let's come back and revisit, if we could, the Eric Rucker story. And again, we're talking about Phil Klein, Eric Rucker, and Steve Maxwell is the third individual.
He's still...
And again, I just look at this, frankly, as a pissing contest between attorneys. I've known Eric Rucker forever. He's a good friend. And politically, some of you listening would certainly strongly disagree with Eric Rucker on some of his political views. But in terms of integrity and honesty, it doesn't get any better than Eric Rucker. I absolutely would go to the wall for Eric Rucker in terms of honesty and integrity. Now, revisiting this whole story, Eric Rucker initially, the Supreme Court was coming down on these three individuals, and there was how many complaints lodged against
they each have a complaint. I mean, there's a complaint against, first it was Maxwell, then it was Rucker, then it was Phil Klein.
Yeah, but the list against Rucker, how many complaints?
Oh, there's several allegations in there, half a dozen or more. I don't remember the number.
10 or 12, whatever it was. But right before his disciplinary hearing, before three individuals, as I understand it, all of which were contributors to Phil Klein's opponent, I might add, right before this disciplinary hearing, all but one or two charges had been dropped. Eric, you know, we were just kind of joking when we said you'd lied to us. No, we didn't really mean that.
Yeah,
that was down to some nonsensical claim about some spreadsheet. When did Eric know that the spreadsheet had been created by some underling in Klein's office? I'm confused on all of that.
Well, and even just that spreadsheet issue, a low-level investigator had that in the office, and someone from Attorney General Six's office found it and then brought it to the attention of the Board of Disciplinary Administrator. But it turns out that nobody knew that the spreadsheet existed. If Eric Rucker would have known about this spreadsheet, he might have changed the way he answered some of his questions in the Supreme Court. Well, I don't think, as an administrator, you can know what all your underlings are doing to that level of detail. So, but the other claim was really very curious. I'm not even sure I understand it yet. The original complaint said that Eric lied to the Supreme Court or Eric misled them. Well, that was taken off the table. There's some disagreement, and there was a disagreement between Eric Rucker and Phil Klein on whether or not they needed to file an amendment to what Eric had said to clarify what it. Eric thought he said everything he said was the truth. He didn't need to file this clarification. Someone in that office thought some clarification of some kind needed to be made. And what was bizarre at the hearing was they came back after lunch and says, "Well, that was filed under seal. We don't know who filed it." So I would have thought that was a slam dunk that, you know, they're trying to pin it on Eric when they don't even know who filed the...
Yeah, and ultimately, because of so many charges being dropped, because they were saying Rucker lies, Rucker lies, Rucker lies, and that's when the Supreme Court of this disciplinary board came back and said, "Nah, we were just joking, we didn't mean it." Now, basically, the penalties, the most severe penalty Eric's going to get, he's going to be banned from eating at Quiznos for a week. You know, why are we still screwing around with this?
Well, it's not clear what's going to happen, in that it's still the ball's still in play. Kind of the recommendation was some sort of public censure, and you there's different severities of that.
Yeah.
But it's not clear whether his disciplinary panel will just say, no, there's no charges here, and that's the end of it, or whether Eric will have to show up in the Supreme Court at an undetermined date later this fall, and then at that point, the Supreme Court can do whatever they want. So it doesn't matter what happened in this hearing, the Supreme Court can do whatever they want. So it's just very confusing.
Sure.
And then getting back into this other thing with Ken Umbear, it's not clear why, when he blew the whistle and he did the right thing, that they're doing to him with something that may really affect his livelihood.
Yeah, the end result of what Ken Umbear did was good for the state of Kansas because it pointed out a lot of things that were going on in our women's correctional facility that shouldn't have been going on.
Yeah.
John?
Connor? I was just going to say, you said the Supreme Court can do whatever they want with Rucker. What's the range? Disbar him?
Well, that's always on the upper end.
Okay.
That's
off the table, as I understand it. That initially, you know, when this Rucker lies, Rucker lies, Rucker lies nonsense was on the table, then the ultimate punishment could have been disbarment.
If you fill out your forms wrongly, that's perjury and so on.
The hearing panel heard the case.
They decide they can basically kill the case, and that could happen. Yet they haven't really issued a ruling. But then if they say no, there's something here, even a censure, I think it has to go back to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And that's usually scheduled months down the road.
But they can end up saying, okay, truthfulness was not there. Shame on you, bad boy. Slap your hand and good night. something.
Well, it's more like you could have been done, but there, I don't think truthfulness was an issue at all. It's just you could have been done a slightly better job in investigating this.
Okay.
But it's also kind of curious that Eric Rucker, when he was being questioned by the Supreme Court, was under another court order here by, I think it was Judge Anderson, not to talk about certain things. So he had a very delicate balance about keeping honest to one court, but not, you know, revealing things that he couldn't to the other court. So
that's a piece of jeopardy that's pretty hard to handle.
And so that could have factored in. You know, it's just hard to know.
Yeah, interesting. So when will we hear about this? After the fall?
Weeks, probably in a few weeks. Okay. How the disciplinary panel rules, and then depending on that, it could go later into the fall. Could be over, or we'd have to wait.
Okay, I know there's a move out there, I think it's coming out of Johnson County, to really take a look at our Supreme Court justices on retention of Supreme Court justices. Where do we stand on that, Earl Glenn? Are you on top of this? What's happening, if anything?
The legislature took no action, and so there are no campaign finance laws that apply to the retention elections. And so while I did go to a Senate hearing and say I think it's a good idea that we have some laws, we have some disclosure of that, there will be no disclosure. And so it's, I guess from a reporter standpoint, I mean, I do online reporting for the Kansas Watchdog, there's going to be some crazy mailings that are just going to come out of the blue from people we've never heard of, from state, you know, probably out of state.
Yeah.
And just figuring out who's sending, you know, this message when we get it in the mailbox. It's going to be kind of crazy.
Yeah, and folks, this isn't a partisan issue by any stretch of the imagination, because there's several on the right, of which I'm a part of that group, that's saying, no, we need the soft money. We don't want all these disclosures on where the money's coming from, and certainly it's on the left. It's both sides. But in terms of the Supreme Court justices, they can go out and raise untold sums of money. We'll never know.
Well, historically, it hasn't been that much. Historically, the issue.
But potentially, it could be.
Potentially, yeah, because there's no disclosure.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what law firm in the right mind, you know, that has a case pending before the Supreme Court isn't going to make a significant contribution?
That's why the disclosure would be very helpful.
Absolutely.
It'd tell you about those conflicts of interest.
Yeah. Why our legislators didn't pass something, you know, in terms of disclosure. Well, beyond me.
It was an election year.
Transparency is the new word. Transparency.
I think it's because most legislators are lawyers.
Yeah, 20%, I think.
Is it only 20%?
I think 20% is the figure. But,
okay. Well, they can.
But they carry a lot of weight, because these 20% are the ones that are really skilled in drafting a bill.
That's right.
I know when I was in the legislature, I had to go to an attorney to help me with the few bills that I drafted, none of which got passed, but I had fun.
You tried.
Yeah. It was.
And then they are able to argue against a particular bill or a provision in a bill or for one from the legal standpoint, you know, and say, okay, well, as an attorney, I can tell you that this is not the right thing to do, or this is the right thing to do, and so on.
Yeah.
So they have a little bit more leverage, I suppose you could say.
Yeah. Well, you know, any Supreme Court justice, frankly, that's up for retention, folks, I'm going to be voting no, and it goes back to this school situation, you know, funding our public schools. And folks, whether you agree that we needed to pump more money into public education, that's a separate debate. But the debate is whether our Supreme Court justices should have been involved in establishing a dollar amount for funding of our public schools. This is a legislative function. Now, you might agree or disagree with our legislators on whether that's truly a priority, adequately funding our public schools. But bottom line, if our legislators are screwing it up, let's vote in a new group of legislators. Let's don't turn this over to our Supreme Court.
Well, the whole idea is keeping the power of the purse strings close to the people. So
yes.
That's why the legislature
is separation of powers, the whole nine yards. In Nebraska and Oklahoma, their Supreme Court made the decision about the same time, saying, hey, you know, whether we agree or disagree makes no difference. This is not one of our functions as a Supreme Court justice.
Especially on the word suitable, was all hinged on one word.
Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, the precedent goes way, way back. The Kansas City, Missouri school system was dictated by
a federal judge,
a federal judge for years, decades, on how much they should spend and how they ought to run the thing. And I think even the amount of taxation, that I believe it went that far.
Well, what's curious about that case is, I don't know if you saw that, but they closed almost half their schools this year in Kansas City, Missouri.
Wow.
So here we have a situation where enrollment was declining, and they couldn't figure it out that we have to solve this problem before it got that bad. So we've got to find a better way to solve problems before we got to close down half the schools.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's run through a couple of more stories, if we could. We'll go around the table. I want to hit on one real quick. And we're going to spend more time on this one next Tuesday, hopefully. By the way, Caleb Stegall is coming on, Tim Rencher, and Pam Wallstrom. Those are going to be our Tuesday guests. We are not going to be on the air Monday. We are taking the day off. So we're just moving Monday's show to Tuesday. But we were recently named in the Kiplinger Reports as being one of the top 10 most livable cities in the United States.
Yes.
And quite a list, prestigious list, Rochester, Minnesota, Des Moines, Iowa, Seattle, Washington.
Boulder, Colorado. Burlington, Vermont, in Washington, D.C. Surprisingly, in that point.
That was the surprise.
Cost of living there is outrageous.
Absolutely.
Having lived there for 4 years.
Absolutely. Cost of housing.
The main thing.
Yeah.
One, traffic will drive you nuts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was the one surprise. But the other nine communities, I mean, this is quite a list indeed. And, folks, we as Topekans, or Shawnee Cannington, should take a great deal of pride in the fact that we are now ranked as one of the most, the top 10 most livable cities in the country. And a lot of it, of course, had to do with our cost of living, standard of living here.
Exactly.
And, folks, again, this might, again, make Google take yet another positive look at Topeka, Kansas.
Well, you were talking about this million-dollar homes. You can take just a nice home in our part of the country, and you take it to, Westchester County, New York, and it's a million-dollar house there easily.
Yeah, and or Washington, D.C.
Yeah, we just don't know how good we have it here.
Seattle's about the same boat in terms of the cost of housing now. A year or so ago, somebody came out with a ranking of the least expensive housing markets, and we were like number five with a three-bedroom, 2,200-square-foot house, two-bath, two-car garage on about a 12,000-square-foot lot. Our median price was $145,000, and that put us as the fifth lowest, as I recall.
Wow.
And I don't remember who did that study. It was in a USA Today article, as I recall. And, that's a big deal. We never went through the housing bubble. Our prices never spiked, and so they never dropped back down. And I think that's part of the deal. But I have to tell you, Jim, I was in Fort Collins over the weekend, and I hadn't been there in a couple of years and hadn't lived there in 25, and went back for a 25th anniversary of an old town that we created during my time as city manager there. And it's just lovely. It's just terrific. And the town, the city is just... It makes me honestly prideful that all the stuff that we did during that time. And they have a tougher freeze and thaw problem than we have in Colorado because the sun comes out in the middle of January and heats it up to 55.
The extremes are,
extremes. And then drops back down below freezing every night. And their streets are in so much better shape than we are in Topeka. It's embarrassing. When I come back to Topeka.
What happened to your tax that was going to fix the streets?
Well, it's out there, and they're apparently doing it. There was a story, I think, in the paper and on the news about the city has hired Bettis Construction to be out there fixing potholes, and they had a thing on the TV last night where I saw them cutting concrete, working at night. There's a crew working all night long, cutting concrete, which is good. You got to square it up, fix the concrete, and then not put an asphalt patch down, but a concrete patch. And they've got to do that all over town. It's got to be done that way. Now, unless they're going to overlay it, then they can put an asphalt patch down and then overlay the whole street. But they've got to get going with that. To make the livable cities list like we did and have our streets in such bad shape, a real black eye for the city government, I think.
We're going to be talking about that at length next week because we should take a great deal of pride. And the fact that we are in the top 10, let's go back to our emails, jim.cates@cjonline.com. Dave Jackson's going to be joining us in a few minutes for an hour of lawn and garden tips. This one's from Terrence. It says, Jim, it sounds like you had a bad attorney writing your bills, not bad bills. Well, Terrence, I'll tell you, when I was first elected to the legislature, one of the first bills that I was passionate about getting passed was doing away with legislative pensions. Now, if you want to get off to a bad start with 164 colleagues, just tell them that your focus is
we're
going to
go
to
your ox.
Yeah.
Well, they're not funded anyway, so they're not completely funded anyway.
Yeah, let's. I certainly didn't win Mr. Congeniality that year. And,
no,
but all 164 certainly knew who I was. And
got their attention.
But it's still a problem that hasn't been addressed completely today. So.
Yeah, the problems, you know, we were looking at back in the early 90s. I mean, 20 years later, 20 years down the road, same problems, just different players. Nothing much has changed. We've got about 9 minutes to go. Let's hit on another top story of the week, John Arnold, and we'll just run around for some real quick comments on it, and then we'll go to Earl Glenn. And Dave Jackson just walked in. He's going to be with us in about 10 minutes. Okay, John, go.
Well, the other, it's good to see that the governor went through the signing process and the veto process and went through all that and then gave kudos to the legislature for doing what they needed to do. That's good, even though some of them weren't happy with the vetoes that he made. I think that's a good story, though. I think it just shows that Parkinson continues to provide pretty good leadership, strong leadership anyway, and that's useful. Then you look down at the oil spill, and boy, oh boy, that's really worrisome. Why we didn't do a better job of making the oil companies be prepared for this kind of thing. You know, that's troubling. And I think there's more going to come out on that probably next week, just from what people have been saying. Apparently the president, well, the headline said President Obama was on the offensive and defensive on the oil spill, according to USA Today.
Let's go around for some real quick comments on those two stories, and then we'll go to Earl Glenn. Earl, comments on Parkinson or the oil spill? Then we'll go to your tops.
Okay. The oil spill, we're going to have, it's basically an engineering failure of some sort, it sounds like, that human error is going to happen. I'm not sure how we can regulate and prevent all human error. So I'm not exactly sure how that could have been prevented. We just need to come together and solve the problem right now.
Generally, what you have to do is have redundant systems. They had a backflow preventer.
Well, they had some. They had some.
But they didn't have enough.
Enough, yeah.
Let's go with a comment on Parkinson's story.
Well, this is a related Parkinson's story. If you go look through everything he talked about in his final thing, that one of the things that he claimed was achievement was a $1,950 bed tax on retirement homes. And I have an 85-year-old friend that she's worried about outliving her money. And it's still not clear how this, you know, isn't going to jack up her rates. That they say it doesn't.
Aren't we getting $150,000 per bid out of the federal government for passing this $1,950 bid tax? None of this makes any sense fiscally. But I think the money's coming out of the feds.
We're getting more money. Somehow we tax the beds, we raise $30 million, and for doing that we get $60 million from the feds, but from the feds they're broke, they don't have any money. And I tried to ask the governor's guy, well, you know, we're paying federal taxes and state taxes out of the same wallet here in Kansas, so how does this make any fiscal sense? And I'm still digging into this because I'm trying to convince my friend Betty that they aren't going to tax her, but we'll see if that happens.
Yeah, because I've got two parents in retirement homes as well. My comment on Parkinson. In terms of John's comment about a strong leader, couldn't agree more. Certainly he showed strength of leadership. I can't think of anything he's done this year that I would agree with. But in terms of strength of leadership, absolutely positively. What he wanted in his State of the State message, which was absolutely brilliant, folks, 30 minutes without a note in front of him.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, exactly.
First governor ever, I think.
Well, a lot of his speeches are like that. He goes no notes.
Off the cuff. Yeah. But, again, strength of leadership, filing deadlines June the 10th. I still contend there
it's might
be a chance he is going to file for a run at something. I think it possibly is going to be the United States Senate. Years ago when I served with Mark Parkinson, that was his interest, what was going on in D.C., not what was going on in Topeka. I don't know. Still could happen. All right, now, Earl Glenn, we've got 5 minutes. Let's go to your next top story of the week.
Another good story that came out from this legislative session was Lexie's Law, which improves the regulation of family daycare centers. But if you talk to some people like State Rep Bill Otto, he was saying it's a little bit like the health care bill. We don't know what we're going to get out of this bill until we passed it. There are all sorts of regulations that KDHE has not yet even had the hearings on that might affect people. So some of the concerns are on just whether they're going to release publicly the names of the child daycare providers publicly. That some of these people, they don't want people just to go on the internet and find out that I have a child daycare facility and a mom with six kids or five kids is there during the day. So there's some of these regulations that are still bugging some people, and I've been receiving emails about that.
John Arnold, comment on that?
I think Earl raises good questions. You know, they passed the law, a law that requires KDHE to issue some regulations, but we don't know how they're going to play out. It's an interesting story, you know, and it's kind of like you do it that way or you do it like the feds did the health reform bill and wrecked 2,400 pages or something.
Well, and there is something in there in the bill, I think, that says that certain regulations have to be done by the next legislative cycle so that the legislature could tweak them if they want to.
Oh, well, that's
so
excellent.
That's a little bit of a good check and balance in there, but there's still some people that are worried about it.
I can understand. Yeah. Okay. Privacy issues and protecting of little kids, big deal.
Yes.
My question for both of you, and again, we're down to 3 minutes and counting. My question for both of you, Joe Sestak, candidate for the United States Senate in Pennsylvania. Is this going to be Obama's Watergate?
This morning on, what was I listening to, Morning Joe, somebody said, and I can't recall who, that the White House was going to release a statement on it this afternoon.
And by the way, just background information, Joe Sestak, of course, beat Earl Inspector, former Kansan,
right,
in the Democratic primary, and Joe Sestak said during the course of the campaign early on, he was offered a job if he would get out of the race, and this is just clearly illegal. So,
well, if there was a
quid pro quo, Watergate situation.
You know, you can offer a guy a job without saying get out of the race, with understanding that you can't have both. You can't do both jobs. So if you take this, well, they said maybe Secretary of the Navy. You take that, well, then obviously you're out of the job. But you don't say we want you to drop out of the race, so Ireland stays in. Here's this job offer. I mean, nobody's that silly to say it that way, I think.
Well, it's going to be a late document done right before a three-day weekend that will explain it.
That's right.
My guess is that they're going to claim it was just a misunderstanding. Somebody had said something that was misinterpreted. But it's also, I don't understand his motivation for coming forward and making the statements that he did, because they are pretty serious if they are true. But somehow I think things are going to get kind of whitewashed here, but that's just my guess.
Whitewashed for who? Both?
Well,
Sestak and Obama?
Just the Democrats. Are
who's going to be thrown under the bus? One of the two has to go under that bus, don't
they? I don't know. That it's just that there was a misunderstanding that never happened. That's, I think, what they're going to say. I don't know if we'll ever get to the truth, though.
I suspect that Sestak will back off from saying that he, or will not say that he was offered a quid pro quo kind of a deal.
Because so when he did,
he doesn't.
When
want
he was on this talk show in February, saying, "Yeah, I was drunk. You know, I didn't know what he was saying."
I don't know what he said.
It
actually,
was
I never,
late in the afternoon. I'd had too much to drink, and I don't know.
Just a misunderstanding.
Just a misunderstanding.
Well,
how does he defend what he's been saying now for 4 months, that he was offered a job?
Well, that's a problem. So
yeah, now he has to come back and say, I didn't mean it."
I misunderstood what the deal was, or he can come back and say, "Yeah, I was offered a job, but it wasn't on condition that I drop out of the race. I just knew I had to drop out of the race to take the job." I mean, you'd have to do that. Sure, you know that.
Earl Glenn, coming up, we are out of time. Coming up on Kansas Watchdog.
Coming up just in the last couple of days, I've focused on some problems at Johnson County Community College, where there's been some allegations that their diversity department doesn't tolerate conservatives very well. So put the story out there. Still investigating.
Diversity, when we said diversity, 10 years ago we were talking about blacks. Now diversity, we're talking about conservatives. Well, I'll tell you.
Well, there's a 50-year-old attorney nurse that went back to school and was told that she couldn't basically talk at certain times. And they probably picked the wrong person to pick on. So
there is a group out there that's actually defending us.
There was a program to go from LPN to RP or RN, and she wanted to take advantage of that one particular program. So she was in a human anatomy class when this problem surfaced. So just kind of curious that they're trying to control her speech.
What
and how
goes around comes around. Now, what group actually is protecting us as conservatives?
Never. Well, but now the diversity thing has basically brutalized her. But she's been following process for 15 months now, and basically they've been stonewalling her.
Well, what's her conservative position in an anatomy class that she was?
She was having a private conversation, and her professor came up and said, "You can't talk about that here."
A private conversation about what?
Well, she had with another student after the class was over.
Oh, not about it.
And it was a question about who got offended by what, and so it wasn't even about the class, and that she just couldn't have a private conversation because someone might be offended by whatever she was talking about.
John Arnold, coming up. Have you got a blog coming up next week?
Sure. But I just did one on the buses. Ride the bus, support the bus. It's important. But, I've got a couple of more coming up. Can't remember what they are, actually.
Next Friday, if we have time, let's get into the bus issue.
Sure.
Okay.
That'd be good.
Okay. I'd like to do that.
I was glad to see that the council dealt with the subject of the buses, and there was good support for continuing the bus levy.
Earl Glenn, we will see you in 3 weeks.
3 weeks. I'll be here, Jim. Thank you very much.
And, folks, again, remember the name Sharon Angle. She is the conservative running in Nevada. And, again, there's five candidates filed on the Republican side of the ledger. The winner, June the 8th, is going to be taking on Harry Reid. Sharon Angle, when she was on the show 90 days ago, she's been a longtime friend of mine, was running a distant third. Well, the Tea Party Express, big in Nevada, huge. As a result of their official endorsement, Sharon Angle has now pulled within one percentage point of Sue Loudon. She currently is leading former Miss New Jersey casino owner, what have you, and she's got the support of the Bush machine and the whole nine yards of the Republican establishment. Danny Tarkanian was going to be the conservative that was going to challenge Sue Loudon. He's fallen to a distant third. Danny Tarkanian, of course, Jerry Tarkanian's son. So if you want to help, if you want to contribute to a true conservative, this could be the next Rand Paul, folks. Take a look. You can go to her website. Sharon is spelled S-H-A-R-R-O-N, Angle, A-N-G-L-E. She's a great one. Okay, Dave Jackson on deck. Stay tuned. More to come. I'm Jim Cates.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we are back. Good morning, Dave Jackson.
Hey, good morning. How are we doing?
Well, I just got an email from Mark Hickson.
Yes?
Mark was our 8 o'clock guest, our Shawnee County appraiser, regular guest on the show, Dave Jackson.
He? Mm-hmm.
And I asked Mark whether there was a top 10 list. You know, we've got this new home that's just been built at 53rd and Urish.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in Southwest, because Southwest Shawnee County is talking about it.
Right.
The value of this thing could be $4 or $5 million or something. I mean, the house is huge. There's no other way to describe it. So the conversation came up. The top 10 homes in Shawnee County.
Sure. Why wouldn't it?
Well,
everybody's into top 10 stuff.
All right. What would be your top 10? Where do you think we would find the most expensive home? I'm going to run through some of these names if you want, just to see how many of these people you know. I know half of them.
Do you? Well, that's pretty good.
I thought
so. That's pretty good.
Well, David Wittig.
Well, of course.
Number one.
Yeah.
And his home appraises for, $2 million. Okay. Next on the list.
He put more than that in the repairs to that thing. I'm serious.
Yeah, I know he dumped a ton of money. I was surprised at just $2 million. Mm-hmm. I would have thought more.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, Joyce Lutz, L-U-T-Z,
mm-hmm.
1137 Camden Lane. I don't know Joyce Lutz. I don't know where Camden Lane is.
Oh.
Do you know either one?
Where Camden Lane is?
Yeah.
Don't know that I do for sure.
And who's Joyce Lutz? Do you know her? I can't place her.
I would,
And that's a $1.6 million home.
I think she's part of the Payless Shoe Source. I'm not sure.
Okay. I'll tell you. Joyce, no husband's name mentioned here. Huh. Might be somebody to get to know if you're out there single, folks. Yeah. Good one to take to the Saturday night dance. Okay, number three on the list, Bruce and Pat McPherson.
Well, sure.
I've been by their home. It's 4,400 Pine Brook. That's in Clarion Lakes, $1.5 million.
Right, yeah. Oh,
that's
huge. There's a nice one down there.
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely huge. Okay, Arnold Graham. And again, 1142 Camden Lane, next door to Joyce Lutz.
Across the street.
Yeah, that'd be across the street. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
And Arnold apparently is single. No wife listed on this. Maybe Arnold and Joyce have got something going. I don't know. But who's Arnold Graham?
Don't know.
I don't know either, but they live across the street from each other, both of which are on the top four. And Arnold.
So are you, you've got the computer open, and once you get down there, I guess you could MapQuest Google the Camden for
yeah.
us.
Yeah. Well, I hate to do it during your show.
Oh,
okay. I'll do it sometime next week. Jim or James and Betty Allen, 63rd and Bayshore Drive.
Jim Allen?
Yeah.
Wasn't he a legislative guy? Way back when?
He was in the state senate, but he was a legislator out of Franklin County. He passed away.
Okay.
Now, there's a Jim Allen that sells real estate.
Uh-huh.
I'm not real estate. He works for, there's a Jim Allen that works for 106.9
uh-huh.
as the sales manager.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It can't be.
Can't be either.
No, I wouldn't think so. Jim's not making that kind of money. And that's another $1.2 million house. Now, the only house in Lake Sherwood that made the top 10, Tim and Carol Edsel,
sure.
36th and Nottingham Road.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful home. Beautiful home.
It is.
Joe and Janet Elsher, A-L-E-S-H-I-R-E.
Elsher.
Yeah, Elsher. 39th and Clarion.
Don't know those folks.
I don't either. Jim and Pam Kaplinger, 65th and Bayshore Drive.
Sure.
I know Jim Kaplinger.
Of course.
Yeah. And then Linda Polly, Dr. and Linda Polly.
Sure.
1580 Lakeside. Yeah.
Great really?
People. Great
Whoa.
People. Yeah.
Yeah, great people. I delivered it a Christmas tree there.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. And the last one, Gilbert Katz and Joanne Turner.
Mm-hmm.
They've got $1.1 million house, 5807 Southwest 44th Court. That's got to be Clarion Lakes again.
Right, it
Has
would
be.
Be. Exactly right.
Has to be. Okay. We'll repeat that, folks, and if you want a copy of it, give me a holler, and we can do that, jim.cates@cgonline.com. We can forward that to you, kind of a fun list.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about gardening.
Let's do.
Let's do. Big weekend.
Well, it's the
Memorial Day weekend.
Right, it's the weekend to finally get your act together all together if you got the time and the weather's going to be nice to finish up your beds. Make sure that if there's any weeding that needs to be done, go ahead and do it and then come out and get some weed preventer granules so you don't have to do that in the heat of the summer. Dress up your mulch a little bit. Folks are doing that. I noticed as I was driving down Topeka Boulevard to get here, Jim, that the Phelps Chartered people are dressing up their landscape out front. They got a pickup load of red mulch and a dozen kids spreading it and planting plants out front. So that'll be a nice spot on Topeka Boulevard right there.
Well.
So I kind of noticed these things. I've been out there. I was out to the South Store this morning to deliver some geraniums out there for a customer that's coming out later. You would know him. The trumpet player that plays for fundraisers for Republicans. I can't think of his name. Anyway, you know him. Even had a nightclub over at 21st and Fairlawn for a while.
Not Lee Barnett.
Yeah, Lee.
Lee Barnett?
Lee needed some geraniums, so I took some out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's a good one. His
mm-hmm.
Law office, I believe, is in Auburn.
Is that where it is now?
I think so.
I'll be darned.
I think that's where Lee Barnett's.
Well, anyway, I took some geraniums and some other stuff out for the South Store.
Okay.
I was
that's
there last night.
61st and Fairlawn.
Right, 61st and Fairlawn. I was out there last night. I delivered another 25 flats of annuals for the mixer match flat sale. There was $16.99 for 48 plants, and you just fill up a flat of those kind of annuals and finish up your planting in your beds as you're dressing up your beds. If you need some annuals for full summer color, that's the way to go.
I know a couple of weeks ago, Dave Jackson on the show, I mentioned this White Barn Nursery, the Jackson's White Barn Nursery at 61st and Fairlawn.
Mm-hmm.
One of the prettiest businesses I think I've ever been in anywhere. And a listener went out the day after and called me, and they said, "We just left Jackson's at 61st and Fairlawn. You were absolutely right."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
Lynn's done a nice job out there, and we've, since you've been there, we've got the shade structure up along the corner of the L part of the barn. We've put a wind block across from the south end of the barn out 42 feet, and then we put a 20 by 40 shade over that part so that the plants will do better, and you won't be out there in the blazing heat or the wind, because we needed to block the wind. That's kind of a windy hill, and so that's all up and looking really nice, very nice. And we've taken care of getting some more stock in terms of nursery. Last night I delivered about 75 trees out there that'll be on sale for 40% off of the regular price. That's a weekend special group of trees. Beautiful trees came in from one of the top quality nurseries in the country. Just they needed to move those out. We kept about 150 of them at the greenhouse. There's 150 or 200 trees. Beautiful, nice trees that your regular, like $89.99, a 7-gallon tree that's inch caliper, it's going to be 10, 12 feet tall. Beautiful tree. You'll be able to buy $89.99. Less 40%, what, $32 off? So,
$58.
$58 puts you in a beautiful tree. Not the junk that comes from the cheaper nurseries. This is just quality stuff. And it was kind of a clearance deal that you had to jump all over. And so we brought in the semi, and we unloaded it Wednesday night, and then put have part of the trees on the truck to go to the white barn. Kept the rest of the greenhouse. So if you want to plant some shade, this is a great time to do it. Just a great time. Because I normally not able to discount trees 40% this time of year. So, anyway.
Okay, and we're talking about Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, 61st and Farallon, or 19th and Lower Silver Lake Road. Take your pick, folks. We need to take a break. When we come back, Dave Jackson, let's talk about double cropping your space for maximum garden production.
Sure.
Okay, we'll do that. And, folks, again, if you have a question or a comment, real easy. Just email us at jim.cates@cjonline.com. We'll be back.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org. It's the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Freudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Frost line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
First of all, one, don't cut them down until the week before Labor Day.
Let me repeat this one more time, okay?
All right.
We just had a blip here. And this is from old Bill. It says, my peonies have huge blooms and weak stems, so they are literally laying on the ground. Other folks have good stand-up plants. Why? I've been cutting these down about a month after they finish blooming. Help. Every day is a good day. Some are just better than others. Old Bill. Okay, now.
Don't cut them down the month after they're done blooming. Don't cut them down until around Labor Day. Because you need those to get strength back to the root system so that next year when they come up that those stalks have more strength. That's one. Two, of course, make sure that you keep any kind of grass, Bermuda, fescue, or anything away from the base of the plant so that there's no competition when that's coming up. If it's in your lawn, you need to clean that up, get the grass away. Three, in terms of fertilization, you would probably want to hit them with a little bit of the Fertilome 20-20-20 in the spring to get a little bit stronger top growth. Four, if they're at all in the shade, your stems will be floppy or skinny, and so if you need to, make sure that the any trees or surrounding shade is minimized to the extent that you can. In other words, prune your trees all the way up, get the canopy up so that your peonies are getting at least 7 hours of sun a day. Otherwise, the bloom will be heavier than the thing. Now, to correct that, Bill, if in fact that's going to be, we have peony rings that are designed just for peonies just to help hold up some of the taller varieties in Kansas. I mean, we have the wind, that kind of stuff that'll whip them around. You can come out and get peony ring.
What's a peony ring?
A peony ring is a ring that's about out of steel that's about 24 inches across that stands about 12 to 18 inches tall that you put down around your peonies.
It's got spikes that go into the ground.
Spikes that go into the ground, and it will hold the ring up off the ground, and will hold your peonies up.
Okay.
So peony rings are the simple answer too, but mainly don't be pruning on your peonies, or don't be taking them back to the ground until nearly Labor Day. We used to cut them down about the 20th of August when we grew them. We had 2 acres of peonies, and I would grow and sell about 1,500 dozen a year. Which brings, my wife called before the show, we're sold out of peonies now, so we can't talk about that on the air.
Okay.
All of our peonies are gone.
That's a good thing.
Well, it is,
you.
Except...
That's a bad thing for the customers,
right.
But great for you.
Right. Well, we should have had more peonies, but we don't at this point. Anyhow, so that would be the answer to Bill. Come out and get some peony rings next year as they start to come up.
Okay. Oh, Bill, if that doesn't answer it, give us a call. Open up our phone lines as well, 295-1150, or you can email us at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Okay. In your Wednesday ad, Dave Jackson, you mentioned, let me read this, in Annette's tip, it says, if your garden is smaller, let us show you how to double crop your space for maximum production. What does double crop your space for maximum production mean?
Well, there's a couple of different ways you can do that. You can grow stuff over and under. Or you can crop.
What do you mean grow stuff over and under?
Well, for example, if you needed or wanted to, if you planted some tomato plants early, for example, and you could have, had you done it, and this tip I should have put in about a month, 6 weeks ago even, you could have put in radishes or leaf lettuce down the rows between the tomatoes and used that space and then harvest it. Then the tomatoes then will be, you'd have all of that harvested here in the next 2 weeks by the time the tomatoes are getting larger and need and would take up that space. That's one. You can you can use in to maximize your space. Then you could plant your cucumbers and have them grow up rather than out. And so then you can, instead of that space where that cucumber would have been, I mean, you can put up a fence. We have we have vegetable netting or cage, okay. But have those grow up and then plant alongside or below your cucumbers. You could plant, for example, you could have planted onions or even had you planned ahead a little bit, you could have planted seed potatoes. Now, for example, if your green beans are up and coming and you'll be taking off that first harvest here, 1st of July, then you can turn that green bean under, rototill those in, and come back with potatoes for the fall, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, any of those kinds of things can be fall planted. We'll have seed potato starts. We will have onion sets again in the fall. We will have garlic. We will have all the cabbage, cauliflower, and broccoli, fresh plants for that. So that you will be able to, as you harvest that stuff, put in a fall cropping. So, I mean, you can really do well in a 10x10 space if you just do a little bit of planting. You can double, even triple crop some areas. And another one would be to plant some determinate tomatoes. In other words, some that will be all done production after July 15th. And then just rip them out, and there'll be space then for another fall garden. Potatoes, you know, what's better? Or you could even follow with green beans again. Mm-hmm. You can double crop green beans, because you can plant green bean seed all the way up to August 15th and still pull a crop off in October, early October. Nothing better than fall crop. So there's so many ideas and ways to maximize if you're really into it and want to see what you can produce on a small scale in a small area, or even a large scale for that matter, but ways to maximize your crop.
Okay, and folks, if you have any questions on this, obviously you can call Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center anytime.
Sure.
7 days a week, 232-3416.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you have questions on these specifics, what can be planted when, just call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll be there.
Okay. So that's what you meant by double cropping. And, mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Fall radishes, again, is another great crop. I mean, they are crisp and sweet, not hot. That's a great time to plant radishes around Labor Day when you've got some of the stuff off your garden.
Let's make sure that our listeners know what container gardening is as well, because Annette mentioned that in Annette's tip. It says we have plenty of varieties of veggies for container gardening and lots of fresh homegrown mm-hmm. garden plants for a great garden start. What's container gardening?
Patio people, those folks that don't have space, live in apartments, that kind of thing, or even if you prefer on the palatial deck of Jim Cates, he can put in a big pot over there and put a bush tomato in that pot and sit out on the veranda, the patio, and pick cherry tomatoes off of his container plantings. Or you can put radishes in there. You can step out the door, onions, peppers. We have bush cucumbers. You could stick a bush cucumber in there with a little bit of a 33-inch cage and grow a cucumber in a container. So the secret is good soil. Don't go out to your garden and dig up a big old garden soil and put it in your pot. For one thing, your pot will weigh about 200 pounds, and that's not good, and then the soil doesn't drain and nothing will grow in it. But come out and get some good quality for loam potting soil and get it in that pot. And then enjoy the fruits of your labor. And so, that's it.
We've got an answer to one of our questions early in the show when we were running through our top 10 list.
Yes?
Yeah. I knew some of these people were. Well, this is from a good friend of mine. I haven't seen this young lady in quite some time.
Uh-oh. She's safe, then.
Well, she prefers to be kept anonymous, which we will do that. But it says the Lutzes.
Uh-huh.
Joyce Lutz is married to Ron Lutz, right. Chairman of People's Financial.
And I think
she was the principal developer of McFarland Farms, where their house is located. So
that's
the
true.
Camden address is McFarland
exactly,
Farms.
Of course, right.
Yeah. Okay, Ron Lutz. Now I've got it.
And of
Ron
course.
Lutz, now that's Silver Lake, Rossville, or something. That was an out-of-town bank, wasn't it? Is it?
It started out at Rossville,
sure.
If that's the same people's.
Okay, yeah, I think I know who they are now.
Got it.
Thank you so much for the information. Okay, Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. Let's take a break.
All righty.
Stay tuned.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, L.A. Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Feudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Foss line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, the things we talk about when we're off the air. Dave
Jim
Jackson,
Dave,
a trivia question for you.
Uh-oh. I'm not very good at trivia.
Well,
I got CRS.
This one you might know.
Oh, okay.
This one you might know. The largest American brewery.
The largest?
American-owned brewery.
American-owned
so
now.
Talking about beer. Yeah, the largest. That's American-owned.
Well, probably, I don't know. Coors is pretty big. I've been there.
They are big. Unfortunately, they're now owned Canadian ownership for Coors.
Did Molson buy that sold. Them out or somebody?
Sold, yep.
I'll be darned.
Coors is gone. They're goners.
Huh. Well,
okay, let's try another one.
Well, Sam Adams has got five breweries all over the place, and they are still, I believe, American-owned.
You got it. You got it.
Huh.
Because Busch, our Budweiser,
yeah,
they're sold. They
Dutch,
sold.
Yeah, they're Dutch or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. And then Miller, they sold.
Did they?
South Africa.
Oh, that's
Brewers
right.
Brewers Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so our three major traditional breweries in this country.
Right.
None of which are now American-owned.
Hmm.
And we've sold, pretty much sold everything there is to sell in America now. With the exception of Samuel Adams. Yeah.
Leinenkugel. That's one of my
That's
favorites.
Wisconsin beer.
Yes, it is.
Leinenkugel?
Yeah. I met the Sun.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah?
We were up at Minnesota, and that night we had gone to a show, a buying show for the greenhouse, Foster's, one of our distributors.
That was at Rochester, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
You were in Rochester.
And then
yeah,
we drove on up to the Twin Cities and went, mm-hmm, got an opportunity with friends to go to the first football game in the U of Minnesota's new football stadium, which was moved back on campus after a hiatus of some 30 years playing in the Twins Metrodome.
Have they got a dome over the new University of Minnesota stadium?
Oh, no.
What's wrong with those people?
I don't,
you know, they were playing indoors,
right,
and now they've got an outdoor baseball stadium,
mm-hmm,
outdoor football for,
right, for both the Twins and the University of Minnesota now.
I don't know what they could be thinking.
I don't either. Well,
I mean, to sit outside in Minnesota in July.
There's at least no danger for the University of Minnesota for a while to be involved in any postseason games. So. at least watching them play the other day. But anyway, and so then we were there with friends. We stayed at a motel out there and went to a new went to a grand opening of a grocery store that had a liquor store attached, and there was Mr. The Leinenkugel's son, he, in the late 20s, early 30s, and he was just thrilled that I came all the way from Kansas to get some Leinenkugel Berry Weiss, which is one of their seasonal beers.
It's a what now?
Leinenkugel Berry Weiss. It's a seasonal beer. You know, Sam Adams has their seasonal beers, the falls, the summers, winter beers.
I wouldn't know about that. I drank Coors Light, and it's good 12 months out of the year.
He was so thrilled that I came in to buy three cases of that, because you can't get it in Kansas right now or anytime soon, that he gave me a Leinenkugel bucket. He was
really?
Just really excited.
Now, their brewery is in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Milwaukee?
Mm-mm. No, some little town. I can't even think of what, of course.
Okay.
But
there's not many regional breweries left as far as locally owned breweries,
mm-hmm,
that actually have beer in a can. I assume Leinenkugel still comes in a can, or do you get the bottles?
It's bottled.
Everything's now bottled?
I've not seen Leinenkugel here, at least in a can.
Okay. Well, I had a couple of cans years ago. I used to collect beer cans.
Oh.
I just sold my collection to a guy in Wisconsin. I just mailed it off or shipped it off. 2 or 3 months ago.
No kidding.
Kind of
so
cleaning
gotta
out the garage and making more room for records, because Nancy has sent me into the garage, you know, with
uh-oh,
the record collection. So just making room. And I had 2 Leinenkugel cans.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Well, those are probably really collector's item now. I've not seen Leinenkugel cans. But anyway, back to the gardening issue, maybe. We do have, by the way, if you're into making your own beer.
By the way, jim.cates@cjonline.com if you've got a question or a comment.
I've got hops, roots.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to grow hops, come on in. We'll sell you some hop fruits.
If you're into homebrewers.
Yep.
Homebrewer, hops, plant them when? Is this,
this
any
timing?
Time during
right
the course of the spring, summer, or fall?
Yeah, you want to get them established in and established enough, because, and then you want to be able to either harvest your roots or attempt to keep them over winter. They are perennial.
What is a hop?
What is a hop?
Yeah.
Well, it's a great big plant. Like it'll grow the size of a big tobacco plant through the course of a season.
And what do you use, the roots off of the hop?
No.
The leaves? Does it create? What is a hop?
Well, I think you use the flower, but I'm trying to remember.
So it's not
Sam
the size
Adams,
of a
if
basketball,
you do,
a hop's not the size of a basketball. It's you're using the flower off of the leaf, off of the stem.
Well, the flower's going to be on the stem, but I believe, and it could be you're using the leaves. I'm not sure, because it's been a couple years when we went through the Sam Adams tour. They go to Europe and buy all of their hops, and it's a big production kind of a thing for them, where they get their hops and how their people test them and all that kind of stuff. So I would have to I have to defer to one of your listeners to know what exactly part of the hops it is. But I have them. I have about 10 or 12 left of the roots. I thought I'd get them in because I was asked for them last year. Had a chance to get them in. Now they're in the cooler. If somebody didn't buy them, then I'm going to have to plant them, same as my horseradish that's in the cooler. And then another one that we have is called...
Now, horseradish. When do you plant horseradish?
Right now.
I love horseradish.
Well, good. Come out and get a root or two, and you'll have it for the rest of your life. It's very perennial.
Really?
And very
will
aggressive.
Will it spread? Is it kind of a strawberry plant that it will spread?
It will spread. Mm-hmm. Right.
So you want to put it into a contained area as best you can.
Best you can, right. Somewhere where it's not going to take over your zoysia.
What do you do with horseradish? I mean, I know what the finished product is. I have no idea how to create finished product.
That's
pull the root?
Pull the root, yeah. It's got a big, long, carrot-like root.
Okay.
It's you pull up and grind it up. You just put it in your Cuisinart, whatever you call those things. Chop it up, dice it, whatever you want to call it.
Okay. Then after you do that, what?
Well, I think the stuff that...
Marinated and...
I think you float it in vinegar, but you'd have to look on the bottle. Again, I don't know much about it beyond the fact that I've got the roots, and I've never grown it. I mean, we've grown a lot of things, but horseradish is not one of them. Now, my uncle grew it, and I don't know, but I did never get to the...
Nothing you're going to go out and pick off the vine and eat fresh.
Well...
I mean, this takes a little preparation. Make horseradish.
You can pull it and eat it if you're just like you can pull a turnip out of the ground and eat it. A little bit of it goes a long ways. I never could eat a whole turnip out of the ground because, man, after a while that just kind of gets really hot.
Yeah, turnips, that kind of stuff. I'm not big into that. We were going to have broccoli last weekend, babysitting my grandson's dog, who's a vegetarian.
Your dog is?
My grandson's dog brought it in from St. Louis to spend the weekend with us. Vegetarian. Eats bananas. That's his staple.
Mm-hmm.
His bananas. Loves cashews and broccoli.
Wow.
Now, have you ever heard of a dog
Mm-mm.
that eats bananas, cashews, and broccoli and turns his nose up at meat? Won't eat meat.
Hmm.
This is a dog. I mean, he's 13 years old now.
He must have a... digestive system problem with the protein. I don't know.
And his, my daughter is off and on her smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Back to smoking now, unfortunately. But when she goes out on the deck to smoke, Frankie's right there with her just trying to inhale that smoke. It's a dog that, if able, would love to smoke and eats broccoli, bananas, and cashews.
Mm.
And will drink beer. I've put beer at his dish before.
How about that? Yeah.
How did we get on that?
We were talking about hops. We were starting on beer, and I don't know about the cigarettes. Anyway, we got to... I noticed that you're still smoking again still a little bit.
I'm pretty much down to, well less than a half a pack a day. I smoke when I drink beer, which means I smoke every day, but not often. You know,
okay,
I have one cigarette before five, and then, you know, when I have that first beer... And I'm going to have maybe cigarette number two, three, or four. That's about it.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much there. But tobacco is the one product you don't sell at Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, or do you?
Well, we sell flowering tobacco, Nicotiana.
Sell what?
Flowering tobacco.
What's that?
It's just one of your annuals that you can put in your containers or put in your beds. It's a dwarf type of tobacco that's bred for the flower. Beautiful flower. Grows very well in the sun or the shade. That's a great little flower that's a little different than the run-of-the-mill stuff.
Now, the tobacco, can you use it as far as chewing tobacco, smoking tobacco?
Never heard of anybody trying it out. At least if they've tried it, they haven't told me about it. But
tobacco is an interesting crop
because
there's only one commercial tobacco farm west of the Mississippi River, which happens to be Weston, Missouri.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Just 60 miles east, and the only reason Weston has a commercial license to grow and sell tobacco is because that tobacco barn was owned by former Congressman Bill Hull.
No kidding.
Yes, back in the 40s and the 50s. The Hull family, very, very active in Democratic politics, and they got a special concession to grow and sell tobacco commercially west of the Mississippi. It's the only tobacco farm, I think, in existence, unless there's been some other political licenses granted to sell tobacco west of the Mississippi. I think that's it.
Hmm. So he actually controls her. The other people probably are growing under license to him then. That's probably the way that's done. Something like that. You'd know that because you're from Liberty, Missouri. Which
pretty
is
limited geographically as far
right,
as that.
Right there on that kind of that bluff right there, whatever, that bend in the Missouri River as it comes down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Weston's a very, very picturesque,
oh, it is.
Romantic town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All the bed and breakfast. And,
right.
And they've got the ski resort up there in the winter. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Neat, neat town. Very
yep.
romantic.
Then the so yeah, we need to go to a break here pretty quick. I guess last
let's
break.
Do that. When,
then
okay.
we'll talk about hanging baskets and stuff.
Let's do that. Your specials coming up.
Yep.
Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. And by the way, Jackson's is going to be open. Obviously Memorial Day, and normally the White Barn location is open on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays only. It is going to be open Monday.
Yes, it
and
will.
Folks, regardless whether you need anything or not in terms of gardening supplies, whatever, just take a drive out and take in the beauty. This White Barn location at 61st and Fairlawn. I'm telling you, this is one of the prettiest businesses I've ever been in. Take advantage of it. Okay, we're going to go back to our emails, I think.
Okay.
After we take a break, stay tuned. I'm Jim Cates.
All righty.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org. It's the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Feudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Foss line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back with Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, and an email from Old Bill pertaining to another show. Old Bill, I will get back with you later today. And
okay.
Answer the question. Yes, indeed. Okay, let's talk about your specials this weekend.
Right. The one that we haven't mentioned is the hanging baskets. Buy one, get one half price. We still have a nice selection out there at both locations. And buy one, get the second half price. We knew like we mentioned earlier, the flat sale, $16.99 for a flat of 48 plants, annuals. Our memorial pots and boxes, and that's making them up fresh as we speak this morning. She's making fresh ones. They start at $9.99 for a nice 6-inch pot that's just packed full of annuals and professionally designed. It's not something where they just lob in some stuff and call it good. These are pretty. And they go on up. We have some 8-inch pots that are $12.99, and we have some boxes, then square boxes, $14.99, and some $19.99 ones, and some $29.99 ones. Whatever you want to spend. One of the good things about it is, at least last year, the box I put on my dad's grave up in Grantville was still alive and doing pretty well at Labor Day when we went back up there to do some cleanup. If you had a cemetery where they don't take everything off your grave right away, one of the rural cemeteries, there'll be a lot of color from that because the roots grow through the bottom of the box and into the soil.
You know, pardon the pun, but is that a dying tradition?
It seems to be.
Yeah.
It seems to be. The current generation does not remember their elders nearly as well.
Yeah.
That's something that my generation...
You've probably seen a dramatic decline in Memorial Day...
observations,
grave,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, well, especially since...
Grave flower sales, yeah.
Well, right. And when we had the 2 acres of peonies, I'd sell 1,500 dozen peonies, and that would be featured, the peonies at the grocery stores. They'd blow them out at 99 cents a dozen.
Yeah.
They'd pay me, I only was getting 65 cents a dozen. Can you believe all that work? I had to get up in the morning, cut those suckers, then bundle them all up, pull all of the leaves off of them, put them in paper, put them in count them out, put them in crates, and deliver them to grocery stores for 65 cents a dozen, and thought I was knocking them dead. This was in 1968, 69, 70, 71.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
68 cents a dozen.
Right. That was big money, we thought.
Your sales as far as plants, you know, for grave settings and what have you, have gone down by what percent over the past 10 years?
Because
my generation, your generation... You know, I don't have that many friends that go out and decorate graves.
Right. You just don't.
And you get, you know, below our generation.
It just is not happening.
I mean, just non-existent. Mm-hmm. Do you ever sell any graveside flowers to anybody under 40?
Yeah, occasionally. Just kind of depends. Yeah, there's a few, but darn few.
Yeah.
Darn few. So, yeah, Memorial Day flowers is off probably 80, 90%. Because we used to sell... We used to take
80 to 90% off.
Probably because,
wow.
Well, local grocery stores for us. I mean, used to. The Dibbles at 21st and Fairlawn, when that was the Dibbles store there, years ago. They would sell. I would take them out 50, 75 memorial boxes a day between Monday and Thursday of Memorial Weekend. We'd be just hustling to get those out there. Sometimes they'd call me before I even got back and say, bring more. So, and that was back when we were selling those boxes for $3 or $4, and they were retailing them around $5.50, $6, or something like that. So anyway, times change.
Yeah, a custom that's on its way out. You want to take a real quick email?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. It says, I have a pair of the upside-down pots. I had no success with tomatoes. So, is there any other plant that these pots can be used for?
Well, if you didn't have good luck with tomatoes, you got to be really... First of all, they need to be in the full sun for tomatoes, or any vegetable, for that matter. But the fact of the matter is... And then the soil you put in them is really, really important. You got to have good quality potting soil like the Fertiloam. And they need to be fertilized once a week because you're in a limited amount of soil. So you got to do all of those kinds of things and make sure that you water the thing clear through.
Much more labor-intensive.
Well, it is.
Than a traditional plant, yeah.
Than a plant in the garden, for sure, because you're in a enclosed container.
Yeah.
Having said all that, you could grow peppers in one of those upside-down containers. You could also stick a cucumber in there, plant, and grow. A bush cucumber would be better. Squash would grow in there if you wanted to give that a shot. Even bush watermelon, for example, would be a good one. But or okra, if you wanted to go out and plant an okra plant in one of those. But the key is plenty of sun and proper moisture and fertilization, proper soil. And anything would grow in them that you could grow in any kind of container that we talked about earlier in this in the show, container gardening. Sweet corn wouldn't grow in there. Don't try sweet corn.
All right. If that doesn't answer your question, give us a call back next week, or you can email us at jim.cates@cjonline.com.
Yep.
Again, we've got a couple of minutes. This weekend.
Another one, perennials. Mm-hmm. And that's, we're moving a new crop of perennials out, and that's been hustling around out there with her help and restocking all of our perennials from stuff that we've grown. They're beautiful. We have them starting at 219 in a little 2.5-inch container, 2 3/4-inch container. Really a great way to get your perennial gardens going inexpensively. This is the time of year when a small plant will do just well. Just fine enough, and we'll go ahead and bloom. We talked about the shade trees and ornamental trees that are 40% off. Got several hundred to choose from. We still have plenty of the proven winter type plants, the premium annuals that come in the 3 3.5-inch pots for $279 and the 4.5-inch pots for $379. We sell our stuff for less than they have most of their stuff at Walmart in those perennials because we grow them here. They're not shipped in, and if you'd go do a price check for 4.5-inch premium annual at Walmart or Lowe's, most of the time they're going to be at $4, $3.99 or $4.99. We're at $3.79, so come in and get that. Water gardeners, we've got plenty of our water plants out, and we've got, of course, our koi. 3-inch koi are $5.99. Been selling a lot of those.
Now, that's at the 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road, location only.
Right. I don't have fish tanks out at the south store yet.
Okay.
Can't
just
afford those.
Everything else.
Yeah.
You're going to find it at 61st and Fairlawn.
Sod
is one of the things you've got to go to 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road for, and always call before.
Right.
Right.
But we will have sod this weekend for sure because it's cutting weather's great. We've got probably 60 yards there now. Probably pick up another 100 for the weekend.
Okay, Dave Jackson, let me toss out the phone number, 232-3416, 7 days a week. Your gardening, lawn questions can be answered over the phone, 1933
yep.
Lower Silver Lake Road. That's the original Jackson's location, been there forever. The newest location, absolutely breathtakingly beautiful, 61st and Fairlawn. Check it out, folks. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great, great weekend. We're going to be back with you, not Monday, but we will be back with you for a special Tuesday edition of the Jim Cates Show. Tim Richer, he's going to be with me at 8 o'clock, around 9 o'clock or so. Caleb Stiegel, and he's really had some high-profile cases over the past couple of years. And then joining me around 9:45, Pam Wallstrom with the Capra Foundation. Enjoy the weekend, folks.